Welcome to the Business Trendsetter Podcast, where we talk about trends and how to grow your business. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. We help you to look at trends and use them to grow your business. We talk about a lot of things. We talk about customers. We talk about value delivery. And of course, all these things are made possible by finding and cultivating and growing really good employees. So we are today discussing this whole idea, this notion of what an employee is in 2023. And in particular, because this podcast is, of course, geared towards business owners and executives, how can you, as a business owner, executive, or manager, leader type, how can you really not only capitalize and capture the right kind of employees, but how can you really maintain their allegiance, their focus, and really their shared vision? And so I want to talk about that in light of a couple of things that I had a conversation with a friend of mine last week, and he told me he's very staunch about it, saying that he wants to take his company and bring everybody back from working remote, and all new hires must report and work in his building, irrespective if their role is software or hardware or anything that would be fine working remote. He wants everybody in the office. So we talk about trends, we talk about mobility, asynchronous communication in life. And Adam, I'm going to take this in light of where we are here the week before Super Bowl, and I'm going to throw you a nice spiral to see if you can catch it and talk to us about your thoughts on how employers could be basically take advantage of what's happening in trends to make their employees the most engaged.
Sure, but before I do that, I want to ask you: did your friend who wants everybody to work in the office say why he wants everybody to work in the office?
He believes that there are certain collisions, quote unquote, that happen in the water cooler, that happen just by having people in the same geographical area, that he really wants to make sure that everybody is, quote unquote, working and that he has control over what they're doing, basically. He feels that a lot of people that are working remotely are just milking it, or maybe dragging their feet, maybe not doing all the work that they're supposed to be doing. And I'll share with you what I said to him after I get your thoughts.
Well, okay. I mean, let's come back to that, because what I've learned from this, your friend, is that he's one, a person who doesn't trust people very much. He has a lot of trust issues. And the second thing is that he operates on opinion rather than trying to get facts. Because I guarantee you that he has no studies or research surveys or anything that has come back and in a demonstrable way said that his claims are in fact factual. There are no studies out there that would say that, these water cooler collisions actually happen and make great, wonderful things occur, nor that if you don't watch your people, they'll be sloppy and lazy. And I'm struck about this because I actually saw the same thing on Fareed Zakaria has a TV show. He's a CNN reporter. He has a TV show called GPS, calls it the Global Public Square. It airs on Sunday mornings. And he interviewed Larry Summers this week. And I'm not a fan of Larry Summers, you know that. Even though he's a Harvard-trained economist and was the president of Harvard University for a while, I think the guy will say anything to get himself on television. And it was fascinating because when he was talking to Fareed, he pops off with this, hey, most CEOs work their way to the top by working in the office, so they want everybody back in the office. And he had no data to support that. So here's this economist who's trying to tell us how the world ought to be run and what the Federal Reserve ought to do. And in that interview, that was one of the first just, off the cuff, this is what I believe comments he made of a few that were pretty stark in my mind, because what it did was it reflected that he was 70 plus years old, and that was the way he thought the world ought to be, not that he had any data. So again, what I would say, about your friend is, hey, you ought to get some data around how people work and how they're productive. We know, for example, that asynchronous work leads to a high level of productivity. If you take somebody and you make them sit at a desk and you watch what they do all day, they'll be less productive than if you let them manage their own time. And that's because we, some people will sit and say, I want to concentrate on this for 20 or 30 minutes. And then they want to take a mental break. They want to let the wires reconnect, see if they're headed down the right direction. So they might, you know, stop and relax. They might read a newspaper article, an online newspaper article, or they might go get a cup of coffee, even though they're only going to drink a quarter of the cup, they go get the coffee. Why? Because it lets them get their mind active again. And you know, what happens in the real world is a lot of times they take that break and then you get one of these water cooler collisions and they lose a half an hour because they end up going into the coffee room. They run into Harry and then they decide to have a little chat before, you know, 15, 20 minutes has gone by. Now they have to go back, reset. And they still haven't done in their minds what they intended to do at the beginning, which was to reconnect the wires and see if they're happy with this worksheet or this document they're writing or the piece of analysis they're working on. So, in fact, what we found out during the pandemic was that the studies that were done showed that people were more productive. And some people were so productive they could do the equivalent of two jobs. Now, that's not everybody, but some people were able to be way more productive because they were in a position to be able to work at their own pace, work at, asynchronously with the world around them. So, you know, now, if I challenged your friend, he'd probably just blow me off. And he'd blow me off because he's got a bias. You know, somewhere in his background, he came up with these things in his mind. And, you know, one thing I've learned over time is that it's hard to counter people's bias with facts. they will fight that tooth and nail.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened when I countered the conversation with, hey, listen, there's lots of reports that are saying the contrary. You know, they're not having to commute. They can, like you said, step away for a minute and come back fresh and more engaged. And I went off and on all these different things. And his thing is like, he says, I don't believe it. He called BS on it, right?
In fact, I think one of the things I've observed, and I've talked to a number of people about it, and I would like to see a study on it, is the change in culture and how people interact with what I would call office politics. There are people that I'm sure, Manny, you've met people who accelerated or their careers did well or they held on to a job because you and I would say they were good at office politics, meaning they knew the powerful people in the organization. They knew how to befriend the powerful people in the organization. And, you know, they had a personality that people liked. And so therefore they kept their job or they maybe even moved up. And one of the things that we found in the pandemic was that by eliminating office politics, to a large extent, because now people were calling into Zoom calls, they were being held much more accountable in the results of their work. You know, like when I called, did you get those sales? Did you get that report done? And they're much more talking about the results rather than befriending each other in the hallway. We saw that we started to see more of a meritocracy occur in a number of companies. And in that effect, why some people are saying they don't want to go back to the office, right? Mm-hmm. There are certain leaders out there today that are saying, hey, I got a huge savings if I don't bring these people back. If I don't have to pay for these offices, it's a huge savings on my account. And they're saying that I'm getting plenty of productivity. In fact, I'm getting better productivity out of them. So it's unfortunate, but you can't fight often biases with facts. And I'll never quit trying. It's a little bit like tilting at windmills, but I do think bringing the facts up are important, you know? I'll come back to the labor situation, but another thing I heard over the weekend was people in Great Britain are starting to come to realize that, in fact, their economy is shrinking and they're having a lot of bad economic problems. And, in fact, their whole relevancy, the Great Britain's role in society of the world is shrinking and their relevancy is less. And that's because that by walking away from the European Union, they became a small country on their own, where they weren't dependent on them for raw materials or oil, gas, commodities. And so they're in a position now where they're just a small country that doesn't really provide anything that you can't source from somebody else. Mm-hmm. As a member of the European Union, you know, they were part of a trading bloc. They had a lot of power. They had a lot of say. They had a lot of voice. And now you have people starting to realize that. It's fascinating to me because 5 years ago, you know, I was never a Brexiteer. And I wrote for Forbes more than once that this was a truly bad idea, that the people of Great Britain would come to regret the whole Brexit thing. Well, now they are starting to realize their economy's bad, but there are still people out there don't want to join the European Union. And the facts don't seem to budge them. So I think that, you know, what we're trying to do on this podcast is help people understand what's going to be most successful for you. And one of the things that you and I have talked about, again, the big trends what the big trends: asynchronous work, the gig economy, artificial intelligence, and why am I not getting the fourth one, Manny?
Mobility,
right. If you look at those four, all those feed into people working from at their pace in their location, mm-hmm. right? They've got the tools to do all those things today. And if you fight that, you're going to have trouble hiring, right?
Absolutely.
And you're going to have trouble keeping people motivated. So we just, you and I have waxed eloquently about the demographic trends, right? For 20 years, it's going to be hard to hire people. And that's because there's too many people my age and older and not enough people in their 20s, 30s, and early 40s. So whereas I might have struggled in my mid-career to go find a job because there were way more of us than there seemed to be jobs a lot of the time, now there's way more jobs. And you know, 571,000 people got a new job last month, which just struck me as amazing, right? The reality is it's hard to get people. And if you want to get people, then you need to be on trends. You need to help them work asynchronously. Give them yeah. the tools so that they can be mobile. Use more gig workers where possible. You know, yeah. think about the fact that, you know, could you get this job done with a gig worker? Because a lot of, again, back to statistics, they're talking about, you know, whether or not people are coming back to work, right? What's the rate or the percentage of the population in the workforce? And they said, you know, some people dropped out of the workforce during the pandemic. And again, Larry Summers in his brilliant ignorance, you know, popped out with this, you know, well, the reason that we're, you know, we lost people in the workforce was because they're all retired. They're all getting older and they retired and you can't get them back. Again, no data.
No data
to support this point of view. The reality is that we lose more people to the gig economy every year than we lose to retirement. There's people, what did happen in the pandemic where people started saying, hey, I don't have to go to an office. Oh, look, this is what I like to do. Oh, what if I just did this? You know, mm-hmm. how much money could I make if I was a graphic artist on my own out of 5RR and I was, you know, or marketing in other places and doing what I really want to do from my house? And then I could maybe take care of my house better, take care of my children better, take care of my dog better, have more free time, get more exercise,
yep.
on and on and on, and see benefits to it. And so, you know, what good employers have to do today is start challenging those old assumptions. Do I need to hire a Jane or a Joe on a full-time basis to do this? Or could I yeah. use a gig worker?
You know, and I think that's where my buddy is.
I try to hire people. Am I supporting them with tools for mobility, letting them work asynchronously, and giving them some artificial intelligence so that they can be more productive?
Yeah, and I think that's where my friend is finding a difficult time getting people to move to, you know, to a state. And he's just saying that there, nobody wants to work anymore. And it's always this thing. And I'm thinking, you know, if you open up your way of thinking and you see that these people can be working remotely, not only can you get the top talent from Iowa or some random city somewhere in Kansas who doesn't want to move, but is highly effective and very talented, not only could you get that top talent, but you could also use the gig economy and not have to bring them on full time. So guess right. what? Your bottom line is improved. And I mean, I can go on and on and on, but like you said, somebody with the kind of entrenched bias, old school, he is in his early 70s. So clearly he's kind of from a different generation in mindset. And I believe he's going to have a hard time finding people. He will succeed, but it's not going to be at the pace or the rate that he would normally succeed if he had a different mindset.
The last corporate job I had before I went back into consulting and then went on my own, I was the head of strategy for a company. And I'll never forget the boss I had, the president of the company, was a West Point graduate. He was only about 6 years older than me. He wasn't that much older than me, but he was very much a military guy. His father had been a general in the Army. He was from the Army, all this kind of stuff. And I'm head of strategy, and I was also head of sales. And I'll never forget, he would come into my office, and like even if it was lunchtime, and if I was reading a newspaper or reading a magazine article, he would just be irate. He couldn't stand it. He, you know, couldn't stand the idea that I was not being productive. And I'd say to him, you know, as a strategist, it's important I know what's going on in the world. It's important that I have a sense of the trends. You know, here, to be honest, a lot of the products that we sell are becoming obsolete, and we're going to have to replace those products. But his mindset couldn't wrap around the notion that me being thoughtful by being up to speed on modern trends was going to be any good. And I point out to him sometimes, you know, it's very hard. I think it's very hard for somebody to have a full-time job in strategy in a corporation, because most of what we do as strategists is we study the outside world. So you're sitting there and you're trying to say, well, you know, what's going to be the demand for whatever products it is that we make? What are alternative solutions? What are alternative technology? You got to be looking around the corners all the time. Whereas most people in a company are trying to get more stuff out the door, right? It's more, better, faster, cheaper, more, better, faster, cheaper. So they start saying, well, what does you as a strategist do? You sit around, you know, thinking up stuff. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's a part of the job, is to think up what the future could be. And so, again, that's one of the reasons that I walked away from corporate work. I said I could be more productive helping people as a gig worker. You know, you and I as consultants could be more helpful, because no company out there tracks 600 trends, but we do. So when I have a conversation with somebody, I've got all this data, you know, about the labor participation rate, for example, that Larry Summers can't seem to be bothered to go get data about. And we can bring that to the discussion. Whereas if you had somebody in a company, I mentioned, you'd say, well, why are you studying the labor participation rate? And it'd be because, well, you know, if we're going to hire people, we got to know, like, how many people are going to be and what are they getting degrees in? But most people don't think that way. They're kind of like, well, you know, what I want you to do is figure out how to write a better help wanted ad.
And I think that a lot of people in those positions, actually both on the leadership side as well as the employee/contractor side, have a hard time separating the time value of money of their own time. You know, they don't understand that value and time aren't always congruent. So we have a tendency to think, okay, this person's making, you know, $40 an hour, so they should be working, and we should be squeezing every single drop of value from that hour. But the truth is, they may only be valuable for 8 minutes of that hour. And the other stuff is done, you know, they might be thinking about something else during that other, whatever, 52 minutes. And so I have this conversation a lot with people. Try to separate your understanding of value from time. Because if you are equating one-to-one, you're going to end up losing. And, you know, somebody comes to you, there's a story about an engineer that was brought in by Ford. I can't remember his name at the time, and I mentioned him in the past, who they had a big machine, big steam engine that had a bunch of issues, and they had a terrible vibration. And this particular guy came in and he looked at the situation and he sniffed around, and he looked about 20 minutes, and he went up and marked an X on this giant steam engine. And he said, drill a hole 3 inches deep, 1 inch wide, right there. Walked away, and they did what he said, and sure enough, it fixed the vibration issue. So Ford gets an invoice, right, in the mail, and it says $10,000. And he was outraged. What are you talking about? You walked around for 20 minutes, and he put up one mark on that steam engine. And his retort, this particular scientist, was, you know, that, okay, so he broke it down, you know, $1 for the X, and $9,999 of where to put it. And that whole where to put it is the break between value and time. So I always remember that story.
I was recently in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I was doing a multi-company workshop. And we're talking about how important it is to maintain sales. You know, another topic we have, right? Keep your sales growing. Keep your sales growing. And there was a woman leader in the room, and at one point she stopped. She says, you know, we've been having this huge debate in our company, and, our volumes are difficult to maintain, but we want to preserve our margin. And so we don't want to lower the price. And I looked at her and I said, this isn't even a discussion. If you're looking at losing revenues, becoming a smaller company to try to maintain your margin, you're running yourself out of business. You have to immediately go forward and try to cut your price in order to try to get your revenues to grow, right? And the reality was is that because she's in the company all day looking at it, she thought this was a very difficult decision. But somebody like us, who's more of a, you know, outside the company looking in, we're able to sit there and say, this is not a difficult decision. If you keep trying to protect your margin, your competitors are going to steal your business. Start cutting price. Make sure you maintain your volume. And if anything, try to grow it to keep your competitors away, and use that lower margin as the driving input for new products and getting new solutions and new ways to grow your business. Let that margin decline, you know, be your incentive for doing some new things. And so, but that's again back to why it's in these trends about mobility and the gig worker and asynchronous work are so powerful, is because those, if you look at people that work that way, look how powerful they can become. This fellow, if he would have been Henry Ford hired, if he'd have been a full-time employee of Chevrolet, he could not have helped Henry Ford, right? Because he would have been a full-time employee. Maybe he didn't even work for them. Maybe he was working for Boeing or McDonnell Douglas, or, you know, he could have been working in some railroad, you know, for GE locomotives. But his full-time employment would have kept him from being able to be helpful. But he was working as the gig worker at the time. And so we have to get over these biases that somehow people who work for us are more valuable than people that work for us as a gig worker. You know, most people can't afford to hire a full-time attorney. Yet we have to have trust in our attorney. Yeah. Very few of us. I don't know anybody that has their own full-time physician, although I guess some celebrities probably do. But most of us have to rely on a trusted relationship with a physician. Those are all somebody that we go to, right, as a service provider. And we need to start thinking about what is it we need from people rather than saying we need people. In other words, what is the output that we want? What is it that we need to get from these folks? Now, if it is something that's consistent, continuous, perhaps it could be a role in sales or customer service, or, you know, could be an accounting role. Then you can say, you know, this is something that I think is important to have as part of the company so that we continue to not only do well, but have insights and gain insights so that we can continue to grow. So I don't want all the intellectual property to get away from me and the gig workers. I want some insight. And then you say, okay, now what I have to do is use those same trends to motivate people. You know, every month they come out with a study of how happy people are on the job and whether, you know, how much they feel like they're appreciated. And they started doing this long before the pandemic. But one of the things that's been now for about the last year, every time the study comes out, it says that only about 30% of people are getting satisfaction out of their jobs. And the rest, there's a lot of people mailing it in, you know, just sort of like showing up just to show up because they told me I have to show up. You don't want that. You know, the guy that knows how to solve your problem, the one bright woman that has a talent can do a lot more for your business than 10 people that don't care.
Yeah, absolutely. There's levels of engagement. And there's a report that talked about in your company, there's going to be a very small number of people that are actually engaged. You have this majority of people who are sort of nonplus. And then there's a small amount that are actually out to create demise or push down your company. And I thought that was fascinating. And by the way, the name of the gentleman I mentioned, the engineer, his name is Charles Proteus Steinmetz, and they called him the Wizard of Schenectady. And I remember that story actually was told to me by one of my engineering professors. And so I actually, now I want to talk about something else. I want to kind of go in a little bit different direction and go from, well, actually they're tied together in that a lot of these companies we talk about, the FANG companies, have been doing a number of layoffs. There's been some challenges. Of course, they are talking about the latest results here. And so I wanted to put that into the arena and talk about, you know, what's happening with the FANG stocks and how can business owners, executives, and even rank and file folks benefit from understanding what they're doing.
Well, again, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen all of the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Microsoft have come out with earnings releases. But let's get it back again to what we tell people. Earnings are a snapshot of history. They don't reflect the current. They don't reflect the future. They are a snapshot of the history. And earnings are highly manipulated. You can make all kinds of adjustments to get different outputs. So when earnings announcements happen, I'm not so interested in the earnings as I'm interested in what were the sales. And I'm interested in the sales forecasting. And so what we've seen is that a lot of people did overhire when sales went up during the pandemic. You know, Peloton is a great example of the company. Yeah. You mean to tell me you didn't realize that you were putting 10 years of sales into 2 years? I can't believe the leadership didn't see that, right? But unfortunately, it happened in a lot of these tech companies. I got this statistic that I was just shocked. In the year 2021, Microsoft hired 70,000 people, 70,000 people in 1 year. Okay, clearly, at that point, you're not sort of looking at things on a trajectory and saying, well, what's happening here? You had a blow-up year, things went really well. It was clearly not going to be sustained at that rate. And so we know that a number of companies didn't seem to understand that they were bringing forward revenues, and that in fact they're going to have a big struggle, because once the pandemic ended, that's the growth of what they were selling was going to slow. And instead of growing at 60% a year, it was going to drop back to growing at 20% a year or something like that. So they overhired. So the layoffs, I think they overhired early on, and they shouldn't have done that. Now, as far as laying them off, I'm still not a fan of that. I think they should have taken a hit to earnings and gone ahead and lost money if they had to. You brought mm-hmm. these people in, you're getting them trained, you're giving them insight. As revenues continue to grow, then you will have developed people that will be very talented for you. So I think it's a knee-jerk reaction to lay them off again, looking at earnings, which is not going to tell you how you're going to be successful going forward. So when I look at those, again, what I look at is a sales growth and forecast. And everybody is still growing their revenues with the exception of Facebook. And Facebook has had three consecutive bad quarters, and in other words, revenues lower than the previous year. And again, they're forecasting for the next quarter to be the same. Now, the stock dropped all the way down to like $80, and it's back up to $140. So a lot of people say, well, if you'd have bought it at 80, you would have done well. And I'd say, yes, but that's a trader. And I'm not a trader. I want to go to bed at night worrying about whether or not I need to sell or buy a stock tomorrow. I buy stocks and I hold on to them because I think they're good companies. And what I would say about Facebook is they are clearly in a revenue problem situation right now. And the CEO has committed to this Meta, which is okay, except that it's burning through a lot of cash and while he's losing revenues. So if he's in a growth stall, I mean, there's no doubt Meta, Facebook, is in a growth stall. That's what they should be worried about. They should be saying, how are we going to get the revenues back up? How, you know, what?
Yeah, let's remind our listeners what a growth stall is.
Growth stall is two consecutive declining quarters or two consecutive quarters where your revenues are less than a year ago. Right. If you do that, you have a 93% probability that over the next decade, you're going to have some serious trouble. In other words, what's happening is it's an indicator that the money is going somewhere and not coming to you. Right. Because your revenues are now stalled. And so that's a difficult place to be. Now, in the past, what Facebook did when they were looking forward was like, look, they spent like $12 billion buying Instagram when everybody's like, well, why? Well, it turns out that people wanted pictures. And so now Instagram makes huge amounts of money, something like $600 million a quarter or something like that. Well, they did the same thing. They spent $19 billion buying WhatsApp to get over the top technology, OTT. And you look at that, okay, that helped them to build out their business, build out their base, give it new capabilities for generating users and revenues. And they made those acquisitions with stock. In other words, they didn't write, it wasn't cash. They just issued more shares and they gave that to people, right? Now what's happening in Facebook is that you've got revenues going down, which indicates that there's not enough attention being paid to the current customers. At the same time, they're saying, well, that's okay. I'm going to replace it at some point in the future with Meta or, some kind of metaverse products. But the problem we have there is that's all cash. They're writing checks for tens of billions of dollars of cash, not issuing stock. So the cash mm-hmm. is going out. It becomes a bet your company phenomenon. So Zuckerberg is now in this bet Facebook, bet Meta phenomenon. That doesn't make me comfortable, right? I'm not comfortable because there's not enough attention to current revenues, and the investments that they're making are huge and they're not generating that much revenue. They're not generating enough revenue to replace the lost revenues from ad sales. So that's the one that I would tell people, that is definitely a red flag. I mean, if you say, well, my gosh, revenue, they'll probably come back to where they were before. And the answer is probably. But again, I'm not a trader. The question is are they going to be around in 5 or 6 years? And right now, that's the one I'm worried about. The other companies, even though their growth rate year over year in sales has not been as good as we would like, in some instances, it's single digit. Reality is that Netflix did get its revenue back up again. Netflix is growing its revenue. It's higher than it was before. Same with Google, which also sells ads, but they're not in a revenue decline like Facebook is. Amazon, again, not in a revenue decline. The growth rate's not what it was, but it's not in a revenue decline. AWS is growing, as well as the traditional retail business is growing. Again, I think they overhired back in the pandemic, too many truck drivers and workers in their workshops, et cetera. Apple also growing. Now I'm so concerned, say, well, look, no, will the product sales in China be what they were before? I can understand those concerns, but right now they're all working hard to make sure they keep growing their revenue, and Microsoft as well. Microsoft's new, and you know, it's Azure product line is doing well. They're very competitive now with AWS, and they just made that investment in the AI company that has ChatGPT. And they put $10 billion into that, and a very big commitment towards artificial intelligence and bringing artificial intelligence into the Microsoft suite.
Yeah.
So I look at all those companies and say, you know what, I'm still fans of all of them, but I think people should be worried about the future of Meta.
Yep. And I think this is a really good cherry on top for today's podcast in that, you know, Adam and I, we look at the trends. We look at what is happening in the world, so that you as a leader, as a executive or owner, can really rely upon that outside party. It's so hard because of bias to make decisions sometimes unless you really have that sense to take a half step or even a full step backward and speak with people that are in the know, that are not in your industry in particular, and certainly make decisions that are for the best of the company with that understanding that bias is going to change your direction. So what final thoughts do you have for today's podcast to our listeners and viewers out there, Adam?
It's going to keep getting tougher to get the best people, and you want the best people. So you have to start to think differently. And if you want to hire them, you're going to have to give them what employees what they want. It's not just pay and it's not just benefits. You're going to have to give them a working environment that really motivates them and keeps them happy, which will include mobility, asynchronous work, artificial intelligence. Just, you know, going to have to make it good for them if you're going to hire them. But keep your mind open to use more gig workers, part-timers, and subcontractors, because a lot of people want to stand on their own nowadays. And that's not a bad way to build your company.
Very well said. Lean on the trends, make your company successful. Thanks a lot for your time, Adam. We'll talk with you later. Cheers.